Where were you in July of 1969 when Neil Armstrong first walked on the moon? Hi, I'm Rick Steves. That was quite a game-changing year on a lot of fronts. It's also the year that the Public Broadcasting Service, that's PBS, was founded as America's public TV outlet. National Public Radio was organized by a collection of member stations a few months later. I'm still feeling the effects of the big lunar landing anniversary and the amazing perspective we got of our home from the moon. How did it make you feel the first time you saw that Earthrise photograph from lunar orbit? Charles Fishman has covered NASA and the space scene on his journalism beat for a number of years. When he visited us on Travel with Rick Steves, we learned many details about the Apollo 11 moon mission, which he covers in his book, One Giant Leap. It includes some things that may have escaped our attention back in 1969, like what the moon smells like. Here's an extra bit from his interview that we didn't have time to include in his broadcast interview.
You know, travel is all about the surprising moments. If it were predictable, you wouldn't need to go.
Sure.
The Armstrong and Aldrin were out on the moon. That very first moonwalk was about 2.5 hours. They climbed back in the spaceship. It's not like Star Trek. You had to seal the hatch and then repressurize, no airlock. And then they unsnapped their helmets. And the entire cabin of the lunar module was filled with an odor. Armstrong described it as the odor of fireplace ashes. Aldrin described it as smelling like the air after a fireworks show. It was the smell almost of burned charcoal. Very, very distinctive, very vivid. And that was the smell of the moon dirt that they had carried in. All six pairs of astronauts smelled the smell, had the cabin fill with that smell, because they all carried that moon dirt back in them. It turns out that moon dust is very clingy and hard to get rid of, and so the cabin ended up filled with moon dust. In fact, Armstrong and Aldrin, another little travel tidbit, found the moon dust so irritating, not just smelly, but so irritating, that on that first lunar landing, the night they spent on the moon, they both wore their helmets and their gloves to avoid breathing the moon dust. They really found it irritating.
So the dust was sticky, and that was a surprise to them. But boy, when you think of the mysteries and the unknowns of this whole undertaking, there could have been a dramatic, terrible surprise that would have destroyed everything. I mean, some people were even afraid that dust might explode when it was connected with oxygen. What was the story behind that?
Yeah, there was a little experiment. The astronauts were warned that moon dirt had been isolated without exposure to oxygen for so long that if they brought too much back into the cabin and then pressurized the cabin with air that had oxygen in it, there might be an explosion, just like there's sometimes an explosion in a coal mine or in a grain silo. And they did a little experiment. They took a little bit of moon dust and they spread it out on one of the surfaces in the lunar module while they still had their spacesuits on, just to see if what that scientist had warned about would happen.
Oh, my goodness.
As it happened, it didn't.
Thank goodness.
But the smell came from that same reaction, which was the moon dust mixing with air for the first time and releasing that odor.
And somebody was thinking ahead about dust when they designed the lunar rover, the vehicle that drove around on the moon, because they actually gave it dust flaps, didn't they? Little fender covers. And one of them broke, and they had to do some clever fixing.
The Apollo 17 astronauts accidentally dropped a hammer on one of the fenders of the wheels of their lunar rover. The lunar rover had four wheels shrouded in fenders because the moon dust would have flown everywhere otherwise. And the hammer falling on it knocked the fender completely off. And they tried to use the rover without the fender. And it just sent moon dust flying all over the equipment and all over them. And so, using some plastic-coated maps, they carried 95 maps in the lunar module, 95 plastic-coated paper maps in their spaceship to the moon, just in case they got lost. A loose leaf Rand McNally for the moon. They actually used duct tape and created a new fender, which they then clipped into place over that rear wheel.
I can imagine them just like being normal people at home. If something breaks in my house, I don't have much of a tool chest or a bank of materials, and I scavenge around and I can take a little of that, and we have some tape. And they're looking around the space capsule wondering, what can we part with to make an impromptu fender? And they actually found it with duct tape and maps.
let's pause and appreciate, Rick, that someone tossed a roll of duct tape into the spaceship that was headed to the moon, thinking, you know what? There are a lot of problems we can't imagine that duct tape will be helpful with.
Duct tape, it always comes to the rescue. Hey, Charles, what goes through your imagination right now when you look up at a full moon on a clear night?
To me, the moon is so beautiful. You know, when there's a clear sky, it doesn't even have to be a full moon. And you really appreciate why it inspired people to imagine. Let's see if we can go there. But at the same time, you know, I know so much about how hard it was. I don't think it feels as close to me as nearby as it did before I wrote the book. I sort of now understand the work necessary to climb the ladder to the moon. I hope one day the young generation of your listeners will get to picnic on the moon.
Ah, that'll be nice. It seems like we have these challenges. We had challenges in the 60s. We took on this challenge in the 60s. We've got opportunities today, but we need leadership and we need to be asked. Kennedy was like the poet of the American spirit, and he was there and he inspired us. And I think we can do that today.
He absolutely did. And that is exactly right. If someone points the right direction, there were no superheroes in the race to the moon. There were just ordinary people who really felt like the mission was so important that they gave themselves to it.
Oh, it was a huge accomplishment and just an inspiration to this day. At least it should be.
Just so you know, I've done the computer searches. We use the phrase, if we can put a man on the moon, as often, literally, in terms of the counts in the newspapers. We use that phrase as often today as we did in the 1960s and 70s. So it is still the standard.
Charles, don't you wonder, I mean, just candidly, why we haven't built on that achievement to create the next one?
Oh, of course. I mean, that's one of the criticisms is, if it was so important to do, how come no one's done it in the last 50 years? How come we haven't gone back?
I don't think we've done anything to that degree since 1969.
Well, okay, that's not fair. We invented the internet. That was a big undertaking. We decoded the genome.
Well, that's
those
true.
Things didn't get the kind of publicity, but they were huge achievements and huge undertakings.
And they were probably accelerated by the technical advancements we enjoyed because of the Moon Project.
Absolutely. But that was a Cold War effort. And in terms of focus and energy and money, that's very motivating. The other thing is, that gave us a reason. If you're going back to the moon now, you need a reason. You can't just say, well, we should go back. It's too demanding and too expensive. We should go back because. And the answer to that is very simple. Just as space travel is hard, going to the moon and living on the moon and then going to Mars and living on Mars, it is much different to visit a place for 3 days than it is to set up camp. And your listeners know that as well as anybody. And so the reason to go back now is to figure out how you live for weeks and months at a time in that environment, right? The lunar module didn't have any chairs because they couldn't afford the weight. It also didn't have any place to sleep. The astronauts just curled up on the floor. Some of them had hammocks and they slept in the hammocks. There were no bunks in the lunar module. So we have got a lot to learn about living on another planetary body, and you might as well do it. The moon is really nearby.
Yeah.
Compared to Mars.
But until there's a good hotel there, I don't think it's going to happen.
You know, there
in a good
this
restaurant.
Case, there's going to be a hotel in orbit before you know it, and that's going to change the game.
Charles Fishman is the author of One Giant Leap. It's about the Apollo 11 mission. How many times have you heard someone say, if they can put a man on the moon, before they make a point about something that they feel needs to happen? Well, today's edition of Travel with Rick Steves is a chance for us to consider the power that we all have when we work together on a goal that serves the good of our entire community. Let's take a moment to explore some of the ways you can make a difference for public radio. In our country, public radio stations rely on the voluntary financial contributions of their listeners to survive. My hope is that your show of support during this hour of Travel with Rick Steves will go a long way toward helping your station thrive for a long time to come. It's no coincidence that public radio has become a leading source of news in much of the United States. You know by listening yourself that the quality of coverage you get right here is unrivaled anywhere else on the dial. Your support goes directly to making this possible. Public radio is an ingenious collaboration on the local, regional, and national level. And at Travel with Rick Steves, we do our part to boost your international awareness on many levels as well. we're asking you to put a monetary value on what you get out of this station throughout the year. You can call in your support, or you can go to the station's website to make your contribution. It's quick and it's easy, and you'll be making a difference for this station and for your community. You can make a one-time gift, or you can become a sustaining member by designating an amount you'd like automatically deducted each month from your credit card. That's a great way to help the station, and it stretches out your donation throughout the year. Decide what public radio means to you, and please make a contribution today during this special fundraising campaign. Public radio is counting on you.